Deadlines Iran's foreign minister urges the Taliban government to remove, quote, artificial barriers that prevent the realization of Tehran's water rights from the Helmand River. The scandal surrounding the Israeli spyware Pegasus deepens as the European Commission says phones of some of its top officials were compromised by the malware. Also ahead, activists and the family of slain Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh urge the US to hold Israel accountable for her killing amid international outcry over Washington's inaction on the case. Welcome to World News from the reigning capital, Tehran. It's good to have you with us. Our top story this hour, Iran's foreign minister urges the Taliban government in Afghanistan to remove all artificial barriers that prevent the realization of Iran's water rights from the Helmand River. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comment in a phone call with the acting Afghan foreign minister, Amir Khan Muttaqi. He said realizing Iran's water rights would be an indication of the Taliban's commitment to its international obligations. The top Iranian diplomat added that a delay in resolving this problem would have negative impacts on other areas of cooperation between the two countries. Amir Abdullahian said a high-ranking delegation will soon visit Kabul for consultations with Afghan officials on the issue. On Wednesday, President Ibrahim Raisi also called for a serious pursuit of the country's water rights from the Helmand River. He said Iran has to secure its rights in order to meet its water needs, especially in the border province of Sistan and Balochistan. The spyware Pegasus is in controversy again. An investigation by the European Commission has reportedly found signs indicating that phones of some top EU officials were hacked using the Israeli malware. No further details are available as the investigation is still ongoing, but media reports have cited a letter by the EU Justice Commissioner that he was alerted by Apple last year of a possible hacking of his smartphone by Pegasus. The letter, which was sent to a Dutch member of the European Parliament, however, said that an initial probe did not confirm the malware succeeded in infecting the devices of he or other staff. Pegasus is produced by an Israeli firm, NSO, and can switch on a phone's camera or microphone. The company is known for selling Pegasus to government clients worldwide to spy on activists, politicians, journalists, and even heads of states. Activists and the family of slain Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh have gathered in front of the U.S. Congress calling on Washington to hold Israel accountable for her killing. Abu Akleh was shot dead by Israeli fire in May while she was covering the regime's military raid in the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. International lawyers, Shireen's family, and a group of House representatives have censured the U.S. administration for its inaction on the assassination.
My name is Anton Abu Akleh, and Shireen was my little sister. When President Biden was coming to Jerusalem earlier this month, I thought for sure he would meet with us. A U.S. citizen, a prominent journalist, beloved by millions of people, was killed by a highly trained Israeli soldier. President Biden was 10 minutes away. He never came to see us. So we had to come here to Washington with support from a community of wonderful people who share our commitment to justice for Shireen. President Biden still hasn't agreed to meet us. We need him to hear from us directly so that he understands the pain our family and too many other Palestinians have endured. President Biden has the power to make sure that this doesn't happen again. We need him to follow his words with meaningful action. Shireen deserves justice, and our demand remains the same, a U.S. investigation that leads to real accountability.
Reports from the United Nations, the New York Times, CNN, and many others have concluded that Israeli soldiers killed my aunt Shireen. There is no doubt. We want to know who pulled the trigger and why, and we want there to be accountability for the system that gave the green light. Journalists should never be targeted while doing their job, no matter which country they're reporting from.
As is Israel's practice, they tried to deflect and to deny responsibility. And in Shireen's case, despite the presence of numerous witnesses, they tried to do the same. Numerous newspapers and organizations had conducted investigations and concluded that an Israeli soldier killed Shireen. Despite all of these reports and despite the promises made, the U.S. has yet to conduct an independent, transparent investigation, nor hold Shireen's killers or the government that killed her responsible. As a result, the family has come here to seek an investigation, to seek justice, to seek accountability for Shireen's murder. It's shocking to me that they had to come here rather than the U.S. administration going to them. They had to come over here to seek justice rather than the other way around.
Every human killed, American or not, deserves justice, Palestinians included, Black folks included. We want answers. We need to ensure that these answers are accurate, that they are transparent, and that they are timely. It has been 2 months since Shireen's death, and we have yet to hold her perpetrators accountable. The State Department released their statements of the summation of the Israeli and PA investigations, but that is not enough, nor is it what our request has been from the beginning.
The U.S. must commit to launching its own credible, independent investigation. I echo the family's call for the Biden administration to have this investigation led by the FBI and the Department of Justice, including the Human Rights and Special Prosecution Section, which are tasked with investigating war crimes against U.S. citizens.
Well, French President Emmanuel Macron is hosting Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman for talks in Paris, despite outrage over the prince's complicity in the murder of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Bin Salman arrived in France after a stopover in Greece and following a visit by U.S. President Joe Biden to Riyadh earlier this month. The trip is seen as the latest step in the diplomatic rehabilitation of the de facto Saudi ruler, as the West is desperate to find new sources of energy amid tensions with Russia. Moreover, bin Salman's meeting in Paris and his recent talks with Biden show the West's failure to turn the kingdom into a pariah. Macron is facing criticism at home and abroad for inviting MBS, with rights groups and a French presidential candidate calling it deeply inappropriate. Khashoggi's fiancée has also censured Macron for receiving bin Salman at the Elysee Palace. The Chinese president has issued a stern warning to his U.S. counterpart as tensions between Washington and Beijing over Taiwan continue to rise.
Those who play with fire will eventually get burned. I hope the U.S. side can fully understand that. The United States should abide by the One China principle with regard to Taiwan, and ensure that its actions are consistent with its words.
Xi Jinping gave the warning in a phone call with Joe Biden. A dispute over Taiwan has always been a bone of contention between Washington and Beijing. The latest episode is a possible trip by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to the island. China has said the United States will bear the consequences if the trip goes ahead. Beijing considers Taiwan as part of its territory. It believes U.S. military and political support for the island emboldens its pro-independence forces.
Tensions are rising between China and the United States. Beijing has issued a stern warning against a potential visit by the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Chinese Taipei. Beijing says that Washington will be responsible for the consequences of the possible visit. Chinese side has made it clear to the U.S. that it is firmly opposed to Speaker Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. We are fully prepared. If the U.S. goes its own way, China will certainly take firm and forceful measures to safeguard its national sovereignty and territorial integrity, and the U.S. should be held responsible for any serious consequences.
So the idea that she would visit Taiwan at this point is intended to provoke a crisis with China. Recall that the U.S. and the British forced NATO expansion, totally ignoring Russia's security interests with the so-called reverse Cuba Missile Crisis, whose purpose was to provoke Russia into acting against the neo-Nazi regime in Ukraine in order to justify the wildly illegal and self-defeating sanctions, economic warfare against Russia.
Analysts believe the latest warning by China against the visit of the U.S. House Speaker to Chinese Taipei was harsher in tone and very stern. Some say the threats contained an allusion to a possible military confrontation between China and the U.S., and that is why reservations have been raised in Washington about the visit. The U.S. House Speaker was scheduled to visit Taipei earlier in April, but the trip was apparently canceled after she contracted COVID. However, some reports say that Pelosi will make the controversial visit in August. Apart from top Democrats, some hawkish Republicans have also come out in favor of the visit, stressing that this visit is a show of support against China.
This is a very serious crisis. How China responds is very difficult to foresee, but it's a moment in which the literally madmen and women in the West are trying to do to China what they are in the process of doing against Russia.
The problems that exist between China and the U.S. are many. There have been U.S. attempts to militarize the South China Sea region, like arms sales to Japan and Chinese Taipei. The South China Sea Islands, which the U.S. disputes, is another issue. Then there is the issue of Russia, which the U.S. has threatened to sanction China if it continues to buy Russian oil. A trade war and technology are other areas which the U.S. has clashed with China.
There are few people today who doubt that China is a global superpower, both militarily and economically. In terms of the economy, China's economy has continued to grow over the past few decades and is well on its way to overtake the U.S.'s by the year 2030. In terms of military and technology, China is now a superpower on par with the U.S., although Washington's military budget is still the largest in the world. Politicians in Washington who are still dreaming of a unipolar world order that came into existence following the collapse of the Soviet Union do not tolerate the rise of China. The first sign of the unease began to emerge after the former U.S. President Barack Obama announced his pivot to Asia policy, which was meant to counter China's rising influence. Obama's successors, Trump and Biden, have continued Washington's anti-China rhetoric. The two superpowers are locked over a number of issues, including trade and the South China Sea. The bone of contention is Chinese Taipei, and Beijing has made it very clear that it will not allow the self-ruled island to become independent.
It really can only be averted at this point by the nations of the West recognizing that they have no solution to the now terminal breakdown of the dollar system, the hyperinflationary collapse, other than sitting down with Russia and with China in a new Bretton Woods conference to replace the now completely broken and destroyed Bretton Woods system that was set up by Franklin Roosevelt and has been systemically taken apart over these last 30 years.
Chinese Taipei is under China's sovereignty and under the One China policy. The United States and other countries have recognized that sovereignty. But Washington, in violation of its own stated policy, and in an attempt to irritate Beijing, has increased diplomatic contact with the Chinese Taipei.
Well, turning to other news now, Venezuela and Colombia have agreed to restore their diplomatic ties once the newly elected Colombian President Gustavo Petro takes office next week. The move came after Venezuelan Foreign Minister Carlos Faria hosted Colombia's Foreign Minister-elect Alvaro Leyva in a border town on Thursday. The two diplomats expressed their desire to progress on a work agenda towards the gradual normalization by naming ambassadors and consular officials from August the 7th. Relations between the two South American neighbors were broken in 2019 after then Colombian President Iván Duque refused to recognize the re-election of his Venezuelan counterpart Nicolas Maduro. But Petro, Colombia's first ever elected left-wing president, had said on the campaign trail that he would re-establish diplomatic relations with Venezuela once in office. Moving on to the U.S., where the economy has shrunk for a second time since April, fueling fears of a plunge into recession. The U.S. Department of Commerce reported that the GDP fell by 0.9% in the second quarter of this year. This follows a bigger drop in the first 3 months of this year. The IMF also warned that the U.S. economy could dip into a full-on downturn, even with a small shock. Moreover, the fund slashed its U.S. growth forecast to 2.3% this year. U.S. inflation hit a 40-year high in June amid rising food prices, largely blamed on the war in Ukraine. The U.S. Central Bank has been raising interest rates aggressively to deal with the scenario. The Federal Reserve has also said it is preparing for another rate hike. Many have denounced the Europe-wide censorship of Russian media outlet Russia Today as intensely hypocritical. However, the European Union's General Court has just denied an appeal by Russia's RT France to uphold the liberty of the press for all nations. Brings an end to the World Bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. In the U.S., federal prosecutors have sought information about the role played by former President Donald J. Trump in efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election as the Justice Department inquiry accelerates. The article you're about to hear has been written by New York Times journalists Maggie Haberman and Glenn Thrush. The piece is titled, Justice Department Asking Witnesses About Trump in its January 6th Investigation. In the U.S., federal prosecutors have directly asked witnesses in recent days about former President Donald J. Trump's involvement in efforts to reverse his election loss, a person familiar with the testimony said on Tuesday, 26th of July, suggesting that the Justice Department's criminal investigation has moved into a more aggressive and politically fraught phase. Donald Trump's personal role in elements of the push to overturn his loss in 2020 to Joseph R. Biden Jr. has long been established, both through his public actions and statements and evidence gathered by the House Committee investigating the January 6 attack. But the Justice Department has been largely silent about how and even whether it would weigh pursuing potential charges against Donald Trump, and reluctant even to concede that his role was discussed in senior leadership meetings at the department. Asking questions about Mr. Trump in connection with the Electors' plot or the attack on the Capitol does not mean the Justice Department has opened a criminal investigation into him, a decision that would have immense political and legal ramifications. The department's investigation into a central element of the push to keep Donald Trump in office, the plan to name slates of electors pledged to Mr. Trump in battleground states won by Joseph R. Biden Jr., now appears to be accelerating as prosecutors with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington ask witnesses about Mr. Trump and members of his inner circle, including the White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, the person familiar with the testimony said. In April, before the committee convened its series of public hearings, Justice Department investigators received phone cards of key officials and aides in the Trump White House, according to two people with knowledge of the situation. Two top aides to former Vice President Mike Pence testified to the federal grand jury in the case last week, and prosecutors have issued subpoenas and search warrants to a growing number of figures tied to Donald Trump and a campaign to forestall his loss. Spokesman for Attorney General Merrick Garland declined to comment, saying the Justice Department did not provide details of grand jury proceedings. The department's questioning of witnesses about Donald Trump and his receipt of the phone records were reported earlier by the Washington Post. If a decision were made to open a criminal investigation into Donald Trump after he announced his intention to run in the 2024 presidential election, as he continues to hint that he might do, the department's leadership would be required to undertake a formal consultation process, then sign a formal approval of the department's intentions under an internal rule created by former Attorney General William Barr and endorsed by Merrick Garland. But in recent days, Mr. Garland has repeatedly asserted his right to investigate or prosecute anybody, including Donald Trump himself, provided that is where the evidence leads. The Justice Department has from the beginning been moving urgently to learn everything we can about this period and to bring to justice everybody who was criminally responsible for interfering with the peaceful transfer of power from one administration to another, which is the fundamental element of our democracy, Merrick Garland told NBC Nightly News in an interview broadcast on Tuesday, 26th of July, when asked to comment on criticism that his investigation was moving too slowly. The questions about Donald Trump focused on, among other topics, the plan he was pushing to derail congressional certification of Joe Biden's Electoral College victory on 6th of January, 2021, the person familiar with the testimony said. The two Mike Pence aides who testified to the grand jury, Mark Short, who was his chief of staff, and Greg Jacob, who was his counsel, were present at an Oval Office meeting on 4th of January 2021, when Donald Trump sought to pressure Mike Pence into embracing the plan to cite the competing slates of electors as justification to block or delay the Electoral College certification. In recent weeks, the U.S. Justice Department also seized the phones from two key figures. John Eastman, the lawyer who helped develop and promote the plan to upend the Electoral College certification, and Jeffrey Clark, a former Justice Department official who who was at the center of the related push to send the slates of electors pledged to Donald Trump from states Joe Biden won. Prosecutors have also issued grand jury subpoenas to figures connected to the so-called fake electoral scheme. Those who have received the subpoenas have largely been state lawmakers or Republican officials, many of whom put their names on documents attesting to the fact that they were electors for Donald Trump from states that were won by Joe Biden. The subpoenas, some of which have been obtained by the New York Times, show that prosecutors are interested in collecting information on a group of pro-Trump lawyers who helped to devise and carry out the plan, including John Eastman and Rudolph Giuliani, who was Donald Trump's personal lawyer. There are also indications that the tense standoff between the Justice Department and congressional investigators over the transcripts of interviews conducted for the January 6th committee hearings is easing. The House is set to begin handing over some of the transcripts and intends to increase the pace in the coming weeks, according to people familiar with the situation. Members of the House committee have said they are still considering making a criminal referral to the Justice Department in hopes of increasing the pressure on Merrick Garland to prosecute Donald Trump. Mr. Garland shrugged off that suggestion. "I think that's totally up to the committee," he said in his NBC interview. Merrick Garland added, "We will have the evidence that the committee has presented, and whatever evidence it gives us, I don't think that the nature of how they style, the manner in which the information is provided, is of particular significance from any legal point of view."
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone, and here is what the command of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, says about rashness and haste. One who rushes madly after inordinate desire runs the risk of encountering destruction and death.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Thank you. This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Principles of Friendship. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dear listeners, I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and you're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. Now, today, we are talking about principles of friendship. Among the main principles of friendship that we need to look at is how to be a successful friend, how to have a successful friendship and a relationship between us and the partners that we have. Remember, friendship is among the main things that we cannot run away from in our day-to-day lives. Everyone in every particular kind of age, kind of life, whether it's a poor person or a rich person, whether whatever race you're having, in whatever geographical part of the world you are living in, you must have a friend. Now, how can you build up this particular friendship and make it successful? How can you build up this particular partnership and make it a successful partnership, a partnership that makes Allah be pleased with you? Now, among the points that we are looking at today is exchanging visits between friends. One of the traits that will make us have a good and a successful friendship is by us exchanging visits between friends and families, of course. Among the well-known social behavior, which is fixed in the nature of human beings, is visiting families, friends, and neighbors in their houses or their workplaces. Visitation shows your concern, love, and respect towards the one you are visiting, and his importance is becoming in your sight. He is feeling that this particular person, the time, now that he's created time and he has come to my house, he has come to my place of work to visit me, means that he is considering me an important person in his life. So among the main points that we are looking at today that will build up our relationship, our friendship in life, is by us exchanging visits between us and the friends and all the people that we need them to be our friends. By us exchanging visits between them, it will build up our friendship and it will make it successful.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and we've been talking about principles of friendship. We've been talking about how to achieve a good friendship, a successful friendship. We say that whenever you want to achieve a successful friendship, we say that you need to consider one thing. You need to consider exchanging visits between you and the people you want to be your friends. Whenever you want a friend, now in the day-to-day life, people are busy. We are dealing with our own deals. Everyone is dealing with their own issues in life, working, business, you know, sports, or whatever it is. But whenever you create time and visit someone in their life, it really brings up a big deal, a great deal of an amount of an acceptance from the other side. They feel important. They feel that this particular person likes me. Nowadays, we have these applications. We have the WhatsApp application, the communication identities, or what can I say? The social media identities that we're using. We could use them too as the items to visit people, to say hi to people, to show them that we need them. You giving a call to someone that could take like 2 to 5 minutes is not really difficult. But remember, the call will really bring up a very good feeling from the other side, and it will build that, good relationship between you and the guy. And from it, you yourself, you won't accept it. Maybe you won't believe it, but you will reach to a particular type of a relationship that will never come back, that will be building up day by day. It will be bringing fruits in your lives. You'll be helping him, They'll be helping you. You'll be helping each other, and you'll be making steps in life. So among the most important things for us to look at while we want to secure a successful relationship, a successful friendship, is exchanging visits between us and the friends that we have. Thank you so much for listening. Till next episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en-islam-page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news, with delight.
Some gardens are decorated with genomes and other cute ornaments, but this garden uses tank debris to stand out amongst others. The intention of the gardener isn't to have the most army-themed pitch. Valerie actually tried to remove the tank, but ultimately, because of its size and weight, it was impossible. So he just let it stay. The owner says he is used to having the tank there, even though it reminds him of hard times. Next to the wreckage, this family has planted cabbage and potatoes, which they harvest and use each year. The tank was left over from the war between Russia and Ukraine that began earlier this year. British paleontologists have made an exciting fossil discovery which has been identified as the earliest known animal predator.
It's quite a large fossil. The preserved part is at least 20 centimetres tall, and it would have lived attached to the seafloor bottom. But it's a broken specimen, so we actually don't know how large the entire colony is. This is only a fragment of it.
Wilby says the animal had a stalk and a cup on top with little tentacles, which most likely used to catch food out of the water. The ancient animal is related to sea anemones, jellyfish and corals, and pushes the known existence of these species back to 20 million years. Wilby explains the fossil displays a key point in the evolution of animal. The fossil is said to be around 560 million years old and was discovered in Charnwood Forest, northern England, amongst over 1,000 other fossils.
Summer heat is here and zoos are working to not only keep visitors cool, but animals safe during the hot weather. A Belgian zoo takes extra precautions to help animals survive a fierce heat wave that has left Western Europe sweltering. A Pairi d'Azur zoo, located in Wallonia in the province of Hainaut, provides animals with frozen food, fruit suspended in water, and extra showers. It has also created extra shaded areas with good ventilation along with water points to ensure animals have access to them. Zookeepers say managing animals in high temperatures requires good forward planning. Zoos across the world have a variety of responses to keep animals cool. So we humans are not the only creatures who feel significant stress during the hot months. Animals, too, are impacted by it.
Iran's city of Rafsanjan has hosted an international talent contest dubbed Stage Stars. The event is aimed at providing a chance for stage talents from across the world to come in the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali reports from Rafsanjan. Let's check it out.
This is a global stage for talents. The fifth International Stage Stars Festival wrapped up with the announcement of winners, who have been competing in four categories of singing, voice acting, show hosting, and sound impression. The top performances from each category won the golden mic and a cash prize.
The festival was a place for more serious competition between those who have a say in a stage performance. I'm so happy to be chosen by the jury as the best show host of the contest.
It was an amazing event for talents. I'm so glad to be part of this. Talents from all across Iran and many parts of the world competed in the festival, so winners should be proud of themselves.
Held in Iran's city of Rafsanjan, the two-day event brought together participants from 14 countries, including Iran, Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, Nigeria, and Turkey, to flaunt their knack for stage performance.
The scale of this contest is global. Many of us participants did not have any idea we could be stand-up comedians or show hosts. But when we got on stage here, we ourselves discovered our own talents.
I really love that, seeing that all people around the world are coming here and presenting themselves. It's a very great feeling. Of course, they will be progressed and they will develop yourself when they will get the result.
The jury is comprised of top Iranian actors, TV presenters, and voice artists. They say the competition has been tough, and those who stood out are real stage stars.
We tried our best to pick talents who really acted like professionals on stage. Not only should they care about the standards and principles of a stage performance, but they must innovate, improvise, and stand out.
This festival acted like a university for stage talents. It taught a lot of lessons about the stage to participants, especially for those who failed to win the contest.
Organizers say this contest is not just about scouting for stage talents. They say the event helps shine a spotlight on talents and lead them to their community.
The fifth Stage Stars Festival is aimed at bringing stage talents to light. Many of the participants already have a few years of experience, so this stage is not supposed to discover them, but to springboard them to a higher level in their careers.
All of the contestants, even those who come from foreign countries, must perform in Persian. However, organizers plan to include other languages in the upcoming editions of the festival.
To those who won the golden mic here, this is a dream come true. But they say, aside from the prize, Stage Stars has marked a milestone in their pursuit of success, since they have now come under the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Rafsanjan.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Age is just a number when it comes to pursuing your goals. That's what 98-year-old Italian man Giuseppe Paterno has proven. Paterno has become the oldest university graduate in his country for the second time. In July 2020, he was graduated in history and philosophy from the University of Palermo. 2 years on, he's now got a master's degree in the same subjects. Paterno grew in a poor family in Sicily and always had a desire for learning, but he was unable to go to university at a young age. He finished high school aged 31, 6 years after he got married. Paterno's love to study or for study never stopped, making him enter the university in his 90s.
The biggest and brightest supermoon of 2022 has risen with a crimson hue above horizons across the globe. It's also known as a buck moon because it falls in July. The name does not come from its appearance. You won't see the shape of a deer on the moon's surface or anything. It refers to something that happens in nature at this time. It's called a buck moon because the antlers of male deer or bucks are in full growth in July. Supermoons occur when a full moon comes closest to Earth in its orbit. This is not the last supermoon of 2022. There will be another in August, marking the final supermoon in this year's set of four. During a routine X-ray examination of one of Van Gogh's paintings, art conservators at the National Galleries of Scotland have discovered a secret self-portrait.
When we saw the X-ray for the first time, of course, we were hugely excited, absolutely thrilled to bits. Such a major discovery of an alternative composition happens once, twice in a conservator's lifetime.
The self-portrait was found during an examination of an 1885 painting by Van Gogh as the museum was prepping for an upcoming exhibition on Impressionism. Hidden from view for over a century, the self-portrait is on the reverse side of the Dutch artist's painting called The Head of a Peasant Woman. It was found beneath cardboard and layers of glue. Van Gogh is known to have often reused his canvases, working on their reverse side as well.
When he took the painting to Paris, he didn't have very much money. He was scrabbling around and decided clearly to use the back of these series of paintings that he'd brought with him from the Netherlands to Paris to explore self-portraiture for the first time.
Experts at the museum believe the materials covering the self-portrait were applied in the early 20th century before the art went on display. Art historians say when Vincent van Gogh was low on money, he took to painting on both sides of his canvases, but over the years, some of his reverse side paintings were covered up and lost. The X-ray image will feature at the Royal Scottish Academy in Edinburgh starting in July.
Children in Qatar are helping a conservation program revive the population of a critically endangered species of turtles. The children help release the baby turtles after they hatch, which usually takes place during the dark hours of the evening. The hawksbill mothers are cared for, if needed, when they arrive at the beach to lay their eggs. When the little turtles emerge, the weaker ones are taken to facilities at the foundation. There they are cared for until they are strong enough to be returned to sea. Program managers say getting children involved helps raise awareness about the endangered species and how they can help prevent some of the challenges these turtles face.
As adults, we are kind of beyond hope. Our brain is no longer plastic. We can't really learn new things. But children have the power to really internalize all these things that they're learning, that they're seeing. They make these habits part of their life. They make decisions based on, is it good for the environment, alongside with economic value for money kind of decisions. And this is what we want to cultivate.
The children also get a chance to form bonds with the hawksbill turtles. Some of them have even named the one they are going to release. That's why life experts with the conservation program say only 1% of every 1,000 hatchlings make it to adulthood. Poaching, climate change, fishing nets and marine pollution have all contributed to the dwindling numbers of the species. The program was launched roughly a decade ago and has released 30,000 hatchlings into the sea in the last 5 years. Experts are optimistic about the success of the program.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. The House Select Committee's investigation into the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol building has produced history's most detailed account of an American president's cruel and seditious pursuit of power. Even now, former U.S. President Donald Trump continues to push states to alter the outcomes of the 2020 presidential election. We now present you an article written by Robert Reich. The piece is titled, Trump's Attempted Coup Continues, Even After January 6 Hearings Are Over For Now. The House of Representatives Select Committee investigating the January 6 attack has finished its hearings, at least for now. But Donald Trump's attempted coup continues. He has not stopped giving speeches to stir up angry mobs with his big lie that the 2020 presidential election was stolen. He gave another fiery address on Friday evening, 22nd of July, in Arizona. He's actively backing congressional candidates who propound his big lie. Donald Trump continues to push states to alter outcomes of the 2020 presidential election. Just recently, he urged Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss to support a resolution to retract Wisconsin's 10 electoral votes cast for Joe Biden. He's encouraging Republican lawmakers in several states to pass legislation allowing them to take over election machinery and ignore the popular vote. Meanwhile, the lives of committee members and their families have been threatened. Witnesses have received gangster-style warnings not to cooperate. The committee's message to all of America, including Republicans, stop supporting this treachery. The committee has made that treachery crystal clear. The committee has shown the deception behind Donald Trump's big lie, including Trump's Attorney General William Barr saying, I saw absolutely zero basis for the allegations, and that promoting it was a grave disservice to the country. It has demonstrated nonpartisan repulsion towards Donald Trump's attempted coup, even in Trump's White House. As former Trump aide Cassidy Hutchinson said, I was disgusted. It was unpatriotic. It was un-American. We were watching the Capitol building get defaced over a lie. It has made open appeals to Republican lawmakers to stop supporting the attempt. The Republican vice chair of the committee, Liz Cheney, warned her Republican colleagues, who are defending the indefensible, that there will come a day when Donald Trump is gone, but your dishonor will remain. It has revealed how average Americans fell for Donald Trump's treachery with disastrous results. Witness Stephen Ayers, who described himself as nothing but a family man and a working man, participated in the January 6th attack because Donald Trump basically put out, you know, come to stop the steel rally, you know, and I felt like I needed to be down here. And it has reminded Americans of their duties to democracy. As Committee Chair Benny Thompson put it, when you're on the losing side, that doesn't mean you have to be happy about it. But you can't turn to violence. Committee member Jamie Raskin recalled Abraham Lincoln's warning that politicians who encourage mobs to rampage and terrorize will destroy the bonds of social trust necessary for democracy to function. It is impossible to know whether the hearings will lead to criminal indictments and convictions of Donald Trump and his enablers. But the hearings already appear to have convinced some Trump supporters that he's a dangerous charlatan. percentage of Republicans who say Donald Trump misled people about the 2020 presidential election has ticked up since last month, while Trump's enormous fundraising operation has slowed down. A New York Times Siena College opinion poll recently showed that nearly half of Republican primary voters would rather vote for a Republican other than Donald Trump in 2024. History teaches us that it is possible to bring down an American demagogue by putting his wickedness on display for all to see. In 1954, I watched the Army-McCarthy hearings. The Wisconsin Senator Joe McCarthy, whose communist witch hunt was ending careers and debasing much of the U.S. government, had charged the U.S. Army with lax security at a top-secret Army facility. The Army hired Boston lawyer Joseph Welsh to make its case. At a session on 9th of June 1954, after Joseph McCarthy accused one of Welsh's young staff attorneys of being a communist, Welsh responded in words that led to McCarthy's undoing. "Until this moment, Senator, I think I never really gauged your cruelty or your recklessness." When McCarthy tried to continue his attack, Welsh angrily interrupted, "Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator. You have done enough. You have no sense of decency." Almost overnight, Joseph McCarthy's immune national popularity evaporated. Censured by his Senate colleagues, ostracized by his party, and ignored by the press, Joe McCarthy died just 3 years later, 48 years old and a broken man. Now the January 6th Committee has produced history's most detailed account of an American president's cruel and seditious pursuit of power. But will it be enough to stop Donald Trump's ongoing attempted coup? That depends on whether Americans heed the committee's implicit plea to ensure that American democracy endures. Yemeni men, firm faith. Part 1.
Big dreams burn down in these flames. The dreams of a young man who wanted to conquer the world with petrodollars and an iron fist. June 21st, 2017, international media reported that a silent coup was underway in the corridors of power in Riyadh. King Salman, the ailing Saudi monarch, deposed Mohammed bin Nayef, the crown prince, and his nephew, and replaced him with his own son, Mohammed bin Salman. But for many, it wasn't news. On January 10th, 2016, The Independent had published an article from Germany's intelligence agency that said they expected King Salman to officially introduce bin Salman as his successor and delegate power. At that time, almost 10 months had passed since the Saudi aggression on Yemen. During the 10 months, the horrifying aspects of the human